All right, and we're back. Yes, it's that time again. It's a New Year podcast with both of us here. The Dice of Screaming returns with a roar. Oh, yeah, here you go. Yep, elicited forth with only a bit of prompting by Canna.
Yes, yes, that was the mighty roar. It's good to be back.
Yeah, this is our first podcast doing it together for the year. So, yeah, last podcast, Mike was not feeling very good, so we just went ahead and I just did a New Year's resolution.
We are mindful not to, like, whenever we have the ability to prevent it, we make sure we do not infect one another's households with various ailments. So if one of us is down for the count, you know, better to just call it, let it be what it is.
Yeah, it was a little short notice, so I wasn't able to remote with another one of our guests, hosts. So, hey, you know, that was just me doing a solo thing for 30 minutes rambling on about what I thought. New Year's resolution. So, you know, you didn't get much time on at the stick with that one. So go ahead. What is going to be your take on the New Year's resolution?
Yeah, it was nice that that's an engagement. If people are wondering what were our New Year's resolutions, mine, I have only one.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah, for many, many years, I have made New Year's resolutions like, in the new year to come, I'm not going to do this or that anymore. I'm going to improve myself. I'm going to get this right. I'm going to make this big step forward, whatever, whatever, whatever. Never, ever works out. Like, just decades and decades of, like, New Year's expectations that were promptly dashed. So, I got just one this year.
Oh, yeah?
I am absolutely not going to improve myself in any way. I am not going to move forward mentally, spiritually, physically, in any way. Until we reach January 1st of next year, I am not going to do anything productive or meaningful or life-improving at all. Nothing of that sort will be permitted into my space. Now, given my many decades-long track record of getting every single New Year's resolution wrong, the odds are fantastic now that...
I see what you did there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A little reverse psychology on myself. It works. So right. I plan nothing of relevance for 2024, but I expect great things.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? We did what we did last year, and we didn't get much out on our Dungeon 23. But, you know, that's a topic I talked about on that last podcast, how to do some things. So maybe we'll revisit part of that again. I think we had some good potential. Although I felt it somewhat straying into Lost City territory. It was kind of like we were hitting the same vibe. But we did have...
Oh, yeah. And then I just got plowed under by like constant travel and lots of deaths. Yeah, I mean, it really tanked everything. My ability to contribute and participate was radically diminished
last year. But I think it will be good if we go back to revisit it and maybe do something different, too. I have some ideas. But anyway, we got some things to talk about. Anyway, yeah, I skipped the intro of us traditionally introducing ourselves. I'm Randy.
I'm Mike.
And together we are the gestalt of the Dice to Screaming podcast. So,
you expect no less from the spavined old war horses of gaming podcasting. We have been around a while. Like, we've outlived the other studs in the paddock. A lot of them are off to the glue factory, and we miss them dearly, okay? We miss every single one of them. We wish they were still here with us, but we're still there.
Yeah, so... in tradition, we did not, we also bucked tradition for the new year, which was not having what was going to be our next topic. So today we're going to be talking about, for this episode, at least when we get around to it, we're going to be talking about Ben Riggs' Facebook post. And if you're not aware of that, we will provide a link in our Facebook post, but he talks about the golden age of gaming.
Yeah. The death of the golden age.
The death of the golden age of gaming,
which is the it is the point put forward by the article, and we're addressing that. We are going to, it's not like we don't have a few similar thoughts and some very similar concerns.
Yeah, but we're going to leave that for when we get in there. But
we will tackle that.
Tackle it, yeah.
We will. Oh, yeah. Not well. It's going to be a little more like a rugby match, but...
Well, it's going to be like the Steelers versus the Bills this week. It's probably not going to be pretty for my team, the Steelers.
Oh.
But, you know, any given Sunday. Know.
Yeah.
You never know.
Hey,
the Lions and the Browns are in this playoffs. I don't know how to put this.
Right now, the devil is still, like, calling the furnace repair guy down in hell. Okay, I'm just throwing it out there. Like, the Wolverines, you know, national champs. Obviously, like, I feel like some kind of, like, bargain has been made with infernal powers. Like, you know, does somebody got a warlock pact going on that nobody was informed about?
Yeah, the Steelers getting in the playoffs, not that big of a surprise. It happens a lot more than you think. But, you know, they're in there. They kind of just fell in there by their own hand. But, yeah, I feel that the Sunday going forward, I'm optimistic, but I'm also prepared for the reality of the situation. The Bills are, you know, they went in there into the playoffs strong. So I don't know that they will be able to conquer them. But we are going to conquer this topic.
I am a little fearful that, you know, such beautiful victories for Michigan teams has lulled me into a false sense of confidence about 2024. Yeah. It's like I feel like after what 2023 did to me, I feel like I'm being coaxed, you know, like I'm being lured in. You're like, I can't help it. I'm torn between the extreme cynicism and suspicion that I developed over a brutal year. And a part of me is waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, what's the catch? Come on, there's got to be something. Like, wait. U of M and the Lions kicking butt, doing great, having a terrific year. Okay, when does the flaming poop rain down and cover everything?
You know, they're just going to... Dude, the old joke, they're just going to be like the pallbearers. I just want them to all the Lions to be pallbearers at my funeral so they can let me down one last time. But, you know, hey, good for them. That's the whole thing. So, anyway, we're going to go ahead and pull trigger on the Astrogallomancer. And I'm going to do the reading this time, but I'm going to have... He's back from vacation, so here he is, the Astrogallomancer rolling... For topic.
Mm-hmm.
And gaze.
Gaze upon the dice.
Well, I see.
Then I will transmit the image into your skull. Much like a trepanning device.
I'm going to see visions of Appendix N and fiction. Because one of our listeners said that, hey, it's time for us to get back in the fantasy literature. Well, yes. So be it.
Totally agree. Our listeners are correct because our listeners are awesome. But
right.
But yeah, you're nailing it because that is very much the stuff we wanted to kick off.
We've been wanting to do an Appendix N New Age or New School, however you want to put it, New Blood. And so we're going to cover some topics that are going to be pretty diverse and broad. And so, buckle up.
Yeah, it's going to be a wild ride with a lot of authors mentioned. You know, like, this is not going to be a threefer where we just, like, if you may recall the big threes that we did in the past, you know, like Heinlein and Arthur C. Clarke and Isaac Asimov. You know, we did things like that. This is going to be a lot wider, okay, because we're going to try to cover as many up-and-coming new arrivals, interesting things of the more recent, like this, in this decade. We want to have some new and relevant science fiction and fantasy fiction that have captured people's imagination in, like, just the last 10 years.
Yep.
So what's new and cool?
And so that will be our next podcast, is New Appendix N. So, yeah, hopefully tune in and stick around for that one. But right now, we got some other business to take care of, and this is not the best way to start off 2024 is with an obituary. But
it cannot be helped.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely a luminary of the golden years of the creation of TTRPGs. Not to mention the era of computer gaming as it exploded into being and became incredibly relevant. Janelle Jacques, who literally since the dawn of gaming in the 70s, delivered so much memorable product.
Yeah, Dark Tower, even Duck Tower, from RuneQuest. About Caverns of Thracia. They also did a lot of work for TSR, covers for Dungeon Magazine, Dragon, as well as the Dragon Mountain Adventure.
Oh, not to mention in the terms of video games, like that, I happen to be a huge fan of Age of Empires. But literally, on my day off, I was playing Age of Empires 3, which, I have Baldur's Gate 3. I could have done that day. But I still dredge up Age of Empires 3 and play because it is that good. But Janelle passed 2 days ago. There were still hopes for recovery up to a point, but it did kind of catch people off guard. Their condition went downhill very rapidly and they did not make it. It is a little bit heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I know, this is not the first time I've seen somebody pass before their time, so I take all this with a grain of salt. 63 is not nearly as long as they deserved. They deserved a much longer and happier life, in those later years, and they did not get that. Very, very much, I feel like we were cheated. There should have been at least another 20 years of awesome left. But in terms of creativity and output, there is a distinct reason that Janelle Chiquet is remembered as kind of a legend in the field, because there are not that many luminaries at the 50 year mark still contributing meaningfully to gaming and video games.
Their artwork was outstanding. I mean, right there from right at the dawn of it all. I mean, Palace of the Vampire Queen.
Oh.
I mean, they did that cover with the boobas and sun's out, guns out. Oh, it's a vampire. Okay, moon's out, boobs out. we got to make a little fun of it. But yeah, they did Dark Tower, which just had a Kickstarter to redo Caverns of Thracia, which was a classic module. A lot of people liked it. They did the cover for Griffin Mountain, and not only just did the cover, but were instrumental in a lot of the design and structure of encounters inside that adventure.
What became Griffin Island.
Yeah.
Their involvement was more than merely artistic.
Or Griffin Mountain. Griffin Island was what one was. But they did almost every game company back then. Steve Jackson Games.
Yeah, Chaosium, West End, Flying Buffalo, Iron Crown, TSR, Game Designers Workshop, all. Everybody. If they were of importance in gaming,
it was
there.
Yeah. And they were doing artwork as well as game design. And that's an outstanding feature. You see a lot of great artists.
Oh, sure.
And you see a lot of great writers and designers, but rarely in the same venue, the same person. And so that's why they're very important. And that's why I think it is a loss for the gaming industry as a whole, but they transitioned to the video game industry. Going with Michael Stackpole, worked for Coleco for about a year, and then moved on from there. But Mike was also talking about the Age of Empires.
Oh, yeah. Look, after the Quake people.
The other one is the Quake franchise was very big. But
Dallas-based Ensemble Studios is the makers for Age of Empires.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And they worked for them.
She was in tight with them. Man. Still great product, because Age of Empires is still a personal thing.
Yeah, a lot of gaming luminaries moved and transitioned over to video games because the role-playing game market was starting to tighten up in the early to mid-80s.
Well, and in a gig-based economy, where oftentimes in professional gaming, there isn't enough to keep you working all year round. So a lot of the creatives then, as well as now, shopped their talents around. Like they were constantly, something was always in on the back burner. Something was always being moved forward. Like it was a smarter financial move to have a lot of irons in the fire. And Janelle absolutely did exactly that. Like just like huge slate of projects across a ridiculous variety of mediums, and able to do it all. It is a loss. It is a loss for pretty much gamers everywhere, man.
Yeah, but probably less known to some of the folks here is that her activism for the Transgender Human Rights Institute in Seattle received accolades
from Barack Obama. Specifically for being involved in and working in opposition to what has been termed conversion therapy, which for LGBTQ youth, I actually don't even support the use of that term. I mean, I actually believe that our society would move in a better direction if we just called it what it actually was, which is child torture for fun and profit.
Well, I don't know about fun, but profit, yeah.
Definitely on the same stand with that. So that if you look back on a life of artistic and work accomplishments, those are impressive enough. But it also shows where your heart is when you're like, hey, here's a group of people who are vulnerable and are very specifically being targeted for horrifying abuse. And that should be stopped. Yeah, good for you. Good for you, lady. You actually did some good in this world. Which I can't even say I've done that. I mean, I'm a nice guy and all that, but I haven't made a giant mark that changed the world for the better. Unless I develop time travel and get to go back in time.
Well, Janelle survived by their wife.
Rebecca Heineman.
Heineman, yeah, thank you. And there is a fundraiser, GoFundMe, for their medical expenses and funeral. So we'll post a link on that on our Facebook.
Yeah, because there are some significant late expenses because this was, a rather expensive hospital stay. A lot of intervention was attempted and failed to preserve life, and it did not work.
But we, leaves behind not only just survivors of their family, but also a legacy of gaming and a culture that they helped make better. And that's what we're here to celebrate. And that, even though they have passed, will remain. So if you have a copy of Caverns of Thracia or Dark Tower, give it a look.
Yeah,
PDFs, you can download them from DriveThruRPG. Just think about that.
So, they're out there.
But, that's our moment of observance, and it's a grim one, but it is a task that falls to us. We remain behind to remember. So, I think that pretty much covers our intro. And kind of stop on a somber note, kind of pick it back up.
Well, hey, we've got a few minutes left before we do our big launch.
We can tear into a little bit of it. So we were talking about Ben Riggs. Now, Ben Riggs, if you're not familiar, is a gamer and a historian. I wrote a book, Slaying the Dragon, The Secret History of D&D, and gave some rather fascinating ones. I don't own a personal copy of it, but I did get a copy. And then I loaned it out. I found it. After reading Play of the World,
which was fantastic. I don't feel like there was a lot of secrets in the secrets of, I feel like that may have been a overstatement for clickbait value.
Sure, it was very enthusiastically written.
It was not poorly written.
Right.
Okay. I can't actually take anything away from that per se. Just that, that may have been something of a misnomer for an opening title.
Yeah, Playing the World by John Peterson. It's very lengthy, and it literally covers such a dearth. And look, it's a historical text. It is a it's a masterwork, and John Peterson, you know,
deserves much higher praise. I'm sorry, but if you're looking for something that is a genuine scholarly tome with all of the, you know, incredible citation that
yes, citations alone.
Exhaustive. Yeah, Peterson nailed it.
So. Yeah, but he was a little bit more lighter-hearted. But they recently put out a post. It was on Facebook, and it got carried around pretty well. So we're going to take our turns with it. And so I guess we'll just start it, and we'll take a break here when we get into that time frame. But they basically asserted right off the bat.
Ben's assertion here was that, judge by the title of it, the death of the golden age of gaming.
So the golden age of TTRPGs is dead.
And I don't know how to say this. Like, if you just read the title, like, there's a part of, I think, both of us, really, that, you know, we have the same fear. We have the same concern that, like, it's possible that the damage that WOTC has done,
Hasbro
/ WOTC, that the damage they have done to their flagship product has been so great that it will diminish the overall well-being of TTRPG gaming. I believe it's a valid concern, but we're going to take a look at some of the points, and there's a lot in there that, as you get deeper into the article, we found both of us had difficulty actually saying, okay, this is a great point, and I totally agree with it, which astonished me, because the title of the article, like, this is a thing that I worry about actively. I think this is a serious concern. So it catches me off guard to find myself reading it, and then section by section, not finding myself able to agree with any of the conclusions. Just like, it was a bit of a shocker.
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's open up with the first segment.
Yeah. So, you know, they assert right now that about the start of 2010s, they saw a dawn of a golden age of tabletop role-playing games. Now, right there, right from the very start, is my warning sign. It's like the 2010s, because
really, yeah, that's like the warning shot of, like, this was your happy moment when you were young, and you have, like, that has skewed your
can I be a little sharp?
But, yeah, no, go ahead, go in with elbows swinging, dude.
I respect anyone who takes the time to learn the history of the hobby, but one thing that I found right off the bat is, and this is just a knee-jerk reaction, but I felt a little bit like, and this is something like almost like a hit piece written by a hipster dude who just found out that Dungeons & Dragons was a cool thing. And that is not to say that Ben Riggs is that person. He is not a hipster.
Oh, this is far better written. I've encountered that type before,
but
as well.
That kind of laziness, and I'm just going to call it laziness to be polite. If you thought that the golden age was in 2010, then you were not there when the magic was written, when we seen what happened when third edition came out and the open gaming license and the SRD came out, the standard rules document. It opened up a whole new vista. I mean, we have still game companies, Frog God Games, Necromancer Games got right on board early on, as well as Green Ronin got their start. So many gaming companies started in like 2004, Paizo was created to carry on Dungeons and Dragon magazine.
Well, now that's going back even further.
That's 2004, but that's well before 2010. Yeah. And so that era was another golden age that we refer to of gaming. Now, you talk about the early 80s.
But what were the ingredients that created this renaissance of gaming that, like, theoretically Riggs is looking back on with joy? It is exactly the circumstances, like, 5-6 years before his golden age.
Yeah, he
started
at 2010.
5-6 years before that was WOTC screwing a pooch as hard as they could and then really running with it.
Well,
it caused everybody to explode into activity.
Yeah, that was 2008. That was 2008, and yeah. That was they screwed the pooch, and you know we know the Pathfinder, all that stuff. But
did that destroy TTRPGs, or did it? Well, obviously, you can look back now and say, "Wow, that created a golden age of gaming," in spite of WOTC/Hasbro's foul ups.
Right, and then
so they that go, kind of just—I mean—that's the red flag right out of the opening.
That you know, because he assumes a lot in this that Dungeons & Dragons and 5e are the be all and end all of gaming, and and that's not
even close.
Is that it? And also asserts that if they go, gaming goes with them, but. 5e only came out in, what, 2014? And then we had Critical Role started its broadcasting on, or streaming on in 2015 on March 12th, the arrival of Craig Hammer, arrival at Craig Hammer. And then Stranger Things debuted in 2016 in July.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, he asserts right there that this brought in a whole slew of fans. And I'm going to say that there were already fans coming in.
Yeah. Look, these things improve an already improving situation. You know, like the opening moment for D&D 5e was not great right at the start. Because as we have made, I believe we have mentioned this a couple of times on the show, they did kind of botch the rollout. Okay. The pacing of the rollout for 5e product.
Right, 3 months between each
very book. Clumsy, okay? Yeah. That was awkwardly done. It did not serve them well. But they were dogged and determined. They stuck with it. The product was very high quality. They did not compromise on delivering smartly thought out and interesting product that people could apply immediately. Also, campaign level stuff. They were paying attention to the folks at Paizo. What have those people been doing so right? And they released campaign-level events in books.
Mm-hmm.
And they found success knocking at the door. And then it just kept climbing as the climate of tolerance towards gaming continued to improve. The nostalgia value that was kicked off by Stranger Things, you know, dads, you know, like the kids watching the horror show with mom and pop. And, you know, like dad pulls up, oh yeah, you think them playing that game at that table is pretty cool. Wait till you see this. I gotta get this out of the, I got a box. Okay. Okay. Check it out. Demogorgon, you know, just, whoa, you've got that, you know, just anyhow, a lot of things were happening at the same time. And it's not like Mr. Riggs is incorrect about this.
But the dates are really wrong. When the Golden Age, I think, we have several peaks and valleys, and we've talked about this on the podcast many times before. So, yeah, regulars should be pretty familiar with this. Yeah, there were, you know, the like 81 to 83 was a very big year for gaming in general.
Yeah, where it moved out of the college campus. You're like, it's no longer played at a single table in the engineering department once a month. Okay. It was allowed out into the wild. It was as frightened as we were.
Well, you had some movies like Mason.
It had never had contact with non-engineer humans before. Oh, gosh. I don't know what to do with this.
And it had its peaks and ebbs, and it went into the, you know, second edition in the late 80s and all through that. And we've had various games come in, companies, and go out and disappear, only to reappear later in different forms and with different names. But I think the early 2000, like 2003, 2004, really heralded, like, people were really picking up on the D20 open gaming license, and it created...
A whole groundswell.
Yeah, and it's continued on to this day.
Yeah, that created the renaissance Mr. Riggs is talking about. So a second catastrophe like this, honestly, we're actually waiting for the ripple effect.
We're looking for the downturn.
Renaissance 2 Electric Boogaloo. But with that, we're going to take our short break.
Yeah.
And we shall return.
Yeah, we're running low on time here, so we're just going to bow out. But stick around. We'll be back with this exciting topic and more of it. In just a moment. All right, and we're back. So thanks for sticking around.
We're totally doing this.
Yeah, we're totally talking about the death of the Golden Age of Gaming from Ben Riggs. And we just left off about the...
I think you might want to wait until the pulse actually stops on this one.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. A little bit of an early prediction there, buddy.
What I was taking task with them was maybe the format of writing on Facebook. You know, you don't have to be as precise, but if you're going to make these assertions about like how the sales of 5th edition and the rise of Critical Role and the influence of Stranger Things affected, and to be clear, throughout their entire, and it's a lengthy post, they fall back to this over and over, that these factors all aligned to give 5th edition its
unique leverage, which...
Yeah, it's gravitas, if you want.
I totally accept that some of these outside sources did have...
Yeah, and he's not wrong, but the precision... But,
like, even at the beginning there, you see the dating wrong, which is, look, if you were noticing the incredible success of 5e in 2013, then you weren't there, because it wasn't there. That kicked off, and I recall the actual initial release, and it was not met with overwhelming enthusiasm as we'd hoped, because it was kind of a awkward rollout that we just mentioned in the last segment.
Because he says right here, and I'm going to quote, around the start of the 2010s, we saw the dawn of a new golden age of tabletop role-playing games. Since then, huge numbers of new players have found the hobby thanks to Stranger Things and actual plays like Critical Role. These new fans discovered a vibrant and thrumming TTRPG industry. There was a D20 fantasy family of games dominated by D&D 5e, but rich with other games published under the OGL and fertile depths of the old school renaissance.
Yeah.
There were also other mainstream publishers with storied brands such as Call of Cthulhu, Deadlands, and Shadowrun. And lastly, there was a flourishing indie TTRPG scene that revolutionized what a TTRPG was, such as Apocalypse World. Now, underneath that is exactly precise to say that, yes, those are certain things, but I don't know. It's the way that you put it together was a warning to me. But they then, the influx of gamers created a rising tide that lifted all boats.
Yes. Now,
we absolutely have absolutely, that's where we're like, yeah, you're absolutely right.
You're right on it, Riggs. You got this. I was, you know, we were still early in the article, so I was really expecting things to go on in that vein. Not so much.
Exactly. Right. And then he goes on to state that novice gamers started out playing D&D 5e. Yes. Well, okay. Right there is a little bit of a misnomer. A lot of gamers who arrived with Critical Role and Stranger Things found themselves playing 5th edition.
Yeah, they... how do I put this? To be a little more accurate, I think Riggs may not have been old enough to have grasped the dynamic of people coming back to D&D after having left it behind for the entirety of 4th edition. Okay, that one of those influxes that is, I think, not covered at all here is that, and you're listening to the podcast of two people who are the test cases for this. We are the living evidence. When they went to 4th edition, we bowed out and we started playing 1st edition. And we started playing 1st edition in game shops at open tables and introing people to the earliest editions of D&D. Here is what classic old school play goes like. The old school renaissance before it was tainted was our baby, and bringing back the sense of classic style gaming was our passion. And then 5th edition kind of proved its mettle, and I came back to the table. It was never a thing that you like.
Randy, well, yeah, I went to play Pathfinder for
you know
a while.
It's not like he didn't dip his toe in the water, but you know, he is an active DM with like multiple campaigns.
I had Pathfinders,
he's got things to do. I, on the other hand, was like, I'm totally getting in the river on this one. I'm going for the full baptism.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went ahead and joined back in. And that's true of an awful lot more gamers than you think. It's not like people, like, I've never played a game before, but 5e made it possible for me to... No. A lot of us who were playing 1,000 other games because TSR had become irrelevant to us came back and said, okay, it looks like you got something I want to play. I'm ready to come home.
Yeah.
It's what I need is for you to provide product that I want to purchase. That's all. That's all you got to do. And they did it.
They did.
And they deserve the credit for that. Totally do that.
Well, now Riggs makes the assertion that he said, and I'm going to quote directly here, but recent developments make clear that this radiant golden age is ending. As surely as the steam engine ended the age of sail, or hobbits bearing a ring ended the third age of Middle Earth. And then starts with a new opening, the doom of our time approaches. Now, this is where really you get your facts right, but I think you came to a wrong conclusion here. It directly relates that the open gaming license scandal of last year, and everybody should well know by now, a number of companies launched new role-playing games, and they also started the Orc license, and a lot of games are getting crowdfunding of $1 million. MCDM is...
Yeah, and I mean...
It's looking like it's going to be pretty big, but it's...
Games you've never heard of from, you know, games that have never existed before, that have never sat on a shelf in any store ever, like this is their first run, are getting millions in...
Crowdfunding. And they may end up being dust collectors.
Yeah, it's but... entirely possible, but the interest is out there, the money is out there, the market is working. I'm having difficulty seeing the death part of this death. Because, I mean, wow, it's looking pretty frisky out there right now. Like, so either things are going to go really badly over the like next 2 years, and some of this will eventually show some signs of being accurate, or it might have been a wildly, wildly overasserted for the purposes of this article.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly it, because he then goes in there and says that in the wake of the open gaming license scandal the past winter, a number of companies successfully launched new TTRPGs intended to move them past the possibility of a Wizards of the Coast ever threatening their businesses ever again. Some of the games gross millions in crowdfunding campaigns. All have been positively reviewed. Some cite the success of these games, which are intended to replace the 5e OGL content for the companies involved, as signs of the continued health and growth for the TTRPG industries. And this is where he loses me. They are not. He then asserts, rather, they are signs that the industry has peaked and may be about to enter a decline. Why, after the open gaming license crisis of 2023, I became pessimistic about the damage the attempt to kill the OGL had done to our hobby. Others told me that the result of the crisis would be a blossoming of a thousand flowers. Discouraged from using 5e by Wizards of the Coast's attempt to kill the OGL, we would all get amazing new art TTRPGs. And okay, I'll stop that quote there, because that's enough to digest to set the basis of why this is the main crux of my contention. And I'll let Mike have a moment on this, but I'm just going to land a plane on this one and say he's wrong, because I think the blossoming of a thousand part, excuse me, is because primarily everybody had wanted to develop a new game. And an idea. They were using the 5e engine, and it was not designed to do certain things. First of all, it was designed to replicate a mode of play in a fantasy dungeon exploration environment with extravagantly detailed lore and locations and characters and ideas and vistas to and spells and all that narrative that comes with a detailed fantasy millennium. It was not designed to do maybe like Cyberpunk or Shadowrun explicitly, or a space fantasy campaign, but it could be, and it would take a lot of work, but at that point, you might as well just develop a new engine and role-playing game to do it, unless you have a specific engine in mind and a lot of time to re-engineer certain concepts. So that's why I think that's where it lost me, and that's my biggest crux of contention. I think that blossoming of a thousand flowers is absolutely essential. That is what is happening right now, and it's going to continue to happen. It does not signal a death phase.
I share a little bit of the pessimism / cynicism, okay, the haunting suspicion that things are not going to be as great as we might like. However, that is tempered by the fact that whether I expect the worst or not, decades of experience has shown me that my pessimism is usually entirely wrong, okay? That I at least get some major part off, like, oh God, everything has gone to crap in a specialized, personally made handbasket on it. It's, and then the handbasket filled with crap is headed straight to hell. That is the kind of expectation that I've periodically woken up with. I've talked about my personal war on myself and my urge to turn into the grumpy old man, and I fight that. But I have learned the hard way that my worst expectations are not always any like measurement of accuracy. It's a measurement of how does Mike feel, not a measurement of
how does Mike feel today.
Not a measurement of how things are actually going to turn out. So I have something of a balanced approach here in that I believe that in the short term, WOTC's actions have badly hampered the position of D&D 5th edition. If that is the edition that you grew up with, that you arrived with, then it may indeed seem to you at this moment, well, then, like TTRPGs itself as a whole, they're all dead. It's all doomed. Everything is ruined. Yeah, look, that's the love and the passion that you have for playing this edition that you discovered, that you came into your own and realized how much you enjoy this. If this was your gateway and it brought you happiness, watching it, WOTC basically light the corpse on fire and then take a dump on the burning corpse is incredibly painful, and I share your sense of outrage and horror. But all is not lost, okay? It is not the doom of our times approaching. It just means that this is going to be your moment of adolescence, that you're going to have to leave that childhood behind, and you're going to have to be ready to make that next leap into sharing other games with other gamers and doing retro gaming with your 5e stuff the way Randy and
Tales
I did.
Of the Valiant is going to be like Pathfinder was to third edition.
Yeah.
It's going to keep it alive. And it's looking like Wizards is going to make the new edition backwards compatible as much as they can. I mean, at this point, it's in their best interest, so I don't see them bucking the trend.
Yeah, but I'll pass my judgments
we actually have product in our hand.
I have some suspicions that they may have like scaled back their expectations for radical change.
Yeah.
Based on the market basically giving them a giant set of middle fingers.
Yeah, and you know, the OGL has not been completely settled, but I think that they have definitely tried to cool the waters. But I'm going to bring on another point there as he comes in here. He says all this has happened before, and then he talks about the 90s. Well, right there, look, the 90s is not the 2020s, okay? We live in a different environment, and what fractured the market back then, the factors just aren't there. Back then, you had a single distribution point, or which was your local game store, and that was it. Yes, you had different distributors. Don't want to confuse those two. But I'm saying, like, as
if you were very lucky, you had more than one bookstore or hobby location, like comic shop, in your town. If you had more than one, you were among the fortunate. We grew up in a town that had, about two dependable comic shops.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit of flux. Like,
yeah, you could go to Lansing or you could go to Kalamazoo.
One would drop off and another one would show up and take its place. But
yeah, we had other places like Kalamazoo and East Lansing that had larger venues. So you could find some weird role-playing games tucked in the corners because they would, you know, take a chance on it. So it was a lot like the independent music of the old day, scene of the old day where you had to record hunt. Noah Joe Nixon? Has he done anything in a while? I don't know. Let's take a road trip.
Mojo Nixon, then your store could use some fixing.
But if you wanted to see like stuff like Fate's Warning in the cheap sales bin, I'm like, hey, this is a cassette made 1986. It's only $3. Well, I'm going to bring that home. And like, whoa! you would have a whole new experience. But yeah, that's how we had to do it.
Oh, man, don't even get me started on the Mojo Nixon thing.
Yeah.
I just, all of a sudden, I want to launch into burn down the malls.
Well, anyway.
But that having been said.
That's a little bit of a.
The 90s was a very, like, the late 90s was a very, very different template. Many of the market relevant conditions that are in place in this era simply did not exist at that time.
Yeah, where you fracture the market, that could spell death because now stores will compete for, they only have so much shelf space, so they're only going to put the big sellers out there.
Now, distribution networks are entirely obsolete in this era. The internet is the point of distribution for most product, and it is accessible to everyone.
Right. You want to look at, hey, I want to see what, like he brings up here, Apollo 47, the technical manual role-playing game. Yeah, you can go find that.
Yeah, it's a level of egalitarianism that it never existed in the gaming universe.
And it also wasn't crushed immediately by the arrival of Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, this time, which as
that was in the 90s.
just at the moment that things were looking pretty grim for gaming overall, because let's be honest, TSR honestly shifted directions, perceiving themselves as more of a publishing empire than a creating empire. You know, like we're just going to sell books now, you know,
and publish campaigns.
And they started to really push the, like we're selling novels, which they sold, but they did not sell nearly as well as they had imagined. And like, there's a backlash that kicks in after the fact, when the anticipated sales do not manifest and the print run was larger than necessary.
Well, yeah, we're...
And they began to suffer the effects of that. And honestly, they were also in a place where the corporate atmosphere there was not one that was open to the concept of self-correcting. Deep cut hint here to the folks who might have... If anybody from WOTC hears this, that's your hint moment. The total non-receptiveness and the upper positions of TSR in that era are hauntingly similar to where you're at now. Okay, back to my regular tone of voice.
Yeah.
I got the haunting out. But
well, it sounds like you should be doing PowerPoint presentation.
PowerPoint's
boring, bro. No, just kidding. Look, office joke aside.
Yeah.
The factors that put into there are not as relevant. And his making that heavy assertion is another galling thing where, like, look, I get it where you're trying to go with this. Has happened before, but it has happened before. It happened in 2008 with the fourth edition. And, you know, Paizo was left like, hey, we can't publish Dragon and Dungeon magazines anymore. And we're going to have to go on our own. So we're going to start an adventure path. And they started Rise of the Rune Lords before they even had a role-playing game to support it. They were just going to, like, coast on the fumes of 3.5.
Yeah. They were just, you know, like, out of the gate, they just, like, jumped into a Hendrix jam. You know, just purple haze. You know, they just had fun.
Yeah, and even acknowledges here, he said, some might say it's unfair to compare the different settings of the 90s to the different systems of today.
Because it is.
Yeah, I'm.
Some might say, yeah, because all of the reasons for saying that are insanely obvious.
Yeah, and that's where really I come down wholly that you got a great set of facts right, but you arrived to the wrong conclusion. Look, it may be that a lot of games end up to being dust collectors on shelves or shoved into the cheap bins, as we used to say. But that is still a form of expression, just like punk rock, just like the indie rock movement of the 60s and 70s. It led to a greater diversity of music, and I think also in this analogy, gaming, different expressions. We're seeing new role-playing games come out of this, like MCDM's cinematic, thematic fantasy game, where they're like every time you roll to hit, you don't roll to hit, you just automatically hit. It's just different degrees of success are included into that. So,
yeah, did you, you know, wing them and wind them, or did you gut them like a trout?
Right. And you so, know? You know, it's a thematic or a cinematic where the a role-playing game where it's being positioned, or I mean, the beta's out there, so you can play test it. But from what I understand, and I have not played it yet, but the DM is called the director, and that's what they're there to facilitate. And so there's a lot of mechanics in there to make players be cinematic and not carefully conserve their abilities, but use them constantly.
Yes, the director. I love it. I mean, as long as you're bucking for Kubrick and not Uwe Boll.
Oh, well, yeah, we can't resist the Uwe Boll. And I brung in music, so once again, you know, the splendorous sound.
I had to let that out. That's just any chance to get a shot.
But look, I don't want to beat the guy up too much. I mean, no, look,
he paces the article well. He moves from point to point in a style that I consider preferable. Like if I were having somebody make a point to me or write a paper, then I would expect them to have these points one after another, building to a principal conclusion. Mm-hmm. It's just that as much as a part of me wants to agree or expects to see something that, like, he'll get halfway in and there will be a couple of points where, like, okay, I hear you, mm-hmm. I hear you. But the conclusion drawn from that collection of tidbits is so wildly off base. Like, it's so ridiculously extreme. And it mostly depends on absolutely choosing not to pay attention to any of the counter narratives. There's some little noises here made about, like, some might say, yeah, there are reasons for that. It's not really being gone into enough. The validity of those things that people might say is kind of overwhelming compared to this somewhat pessimistic view of, oh, well, you know, it's just all doomed because the flagship I love is going to sink. The flagship is not the fleet.
Mm.
Okay? I mean, if WOTC and 5E is your enterprise, that doesn't mean the battle is lost or that the war is over. That's a ship. It's an important ship. And we love it. Okay, we really do. But the flagship is not the fleet. And a ship sinking is not the end of the war. So, you know,
it's a loss.
I'm not spewing blind optimism, but I'm also not just like, oh, it's time to hang up my hat and just go up. That is ludicrous behavior.
Now, where I get a little bit more
lighthearted, I think it's because of how much in love with, like, that period, like that glow that comes over a gamer. When you and I think of hitting our stride in the red box sets, like that we were getting our feet wet, and then we hit our real stride on 1E.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we turned from kids playing with a box set and some dice into people who were learning to DM. And saw it as a craft and a passion. Like this is something you want to make it fun, you want to make it awesome, and you're going to have a great time with your friends. That was our moment. I think that was his moment. And I think Riggs may have developed this opinion because it's tearing him apart. You know, he's losing that
golden age. Yeah, okay.
He's losing his golden age. And it's not everybody's golden age.
You know, Kobold Press is going to come out with Tales of the Valiant, and I think that it'll do very well. Will it? Crush.
Oh, God, no.
5E, well, everybody just come clamoring over. He makes another point about...
It's going to take years to watch
Daggerheart and their effects on that. I mean, we don't even know that they're going to switch over to Daggerheart. I'm going to assume Critical Role will and leave D&D behind, but they may decide to make some changes. And, I mean, they should be allowed to do that. However, that they did their normal D&D game campaign along with Candela Obscura, but they were just two different streams. I think he didn't make that, I don't know. But anyway, look, he talks about where he thinks it's going to go. And on that, yeah, that's subjective. That's an opinion. And I'm here for that. But he ends it with, and so a golden age ends, sputters out.
Yet to see the signs of that yet. I mean, we're talking years out, if at all.
Yeah, this blossoming of a thousand flowers, I think, and I do like that.
Believe me, the
cutting off of a head causes the blossoming of a thousand flowers. Yeah.
I got to say, our experience so far has been that a lot of the other game companies have a limited window of opportunity at times like these. Mm-hmm. And it has always served them well historically.
Yeah.
Like, just this is their opportunity when people who are gamers, can you really say, like, I'm a gamer, but there is only one game that I will ever, ever play, and I will not play any others, and I'm not involved in any of these other things, and I will never touch those. Yeah.
All right. I mean,
I don't want to gatekeep people and say, well, you're not a gamer, but I guess you're opting out. Like, if right, the yeah. thing you like crumples and you cannot find anything else, that's on you. You're gatekeeping yourself. You've locked yourself out of the hobby because you don't want to be there. The rest of us, on the other hand, you know, when dice hit the table, I honestly don't care what's on the menu. I came to this restaurant to eat, and something is going to be on the menu. I don't know what yet.
But I'm
sort of like the James Dean Rebel Without a Cause of gamers. Like, what are you rebelling against? I don't know, man. What do you got? I'm here for whatever you got.
And yeah, the signs, the tea leaves, as to say, is not here. I think he's misreading them a little bit, but maybe that's a difference of opinion. But I would just also assert that conventions are at an all-time high. There's literally a big convention every freaking month, and it's only getting bigger. And, you know,
The comeback from the massive beatdown we all took in COVID, where everybody had to take a break. Everybody had to take some time off. And then the next year was pretty shaky at best, you know, even with people doing a little better, we got all vaxxed up. We're all ready to go back out and be a part of a community again and see each other face to face. We were still on that curve of comeback. And here we are a few years later. And, oh, man, those numbers are back to being ridiculously impressive. Now, we'll see what happens in this year to come, because this is going to be our year. You know, 2023, we had not really seen devastation from WOTC/Hasbro's failures in January and February and so on. We'll see if that's sustained this year. Yeah, and he didn't
even mention that, like,
this would tell us a lot.
In 2 weeks, Paizo. After the announcement of the OGO scandal, in 2 weeks they sold out through 8 months of stock of their core rulebook. So
they had to frantically place orders.
Now they did do a remaster,
but
they're a lot more conservative about that, and they're revising the Starfinder game. So, you know, it's looking promising because they have a very hefty publishing schedule ahead of them, and if they're optimistic about the future.
I don't think I'm like everybody else, though. I also, here's a mistake I don't make. Mm. I don't think I'm everyone else. I feel like Ben Riggs is drawing from personal experience and personal, trauma here on this subject, and is projecting that onto a wider stage and anticipates that, everybody's got to feel like this, and this is how things are going to go. No, I'm the guy who, there's 50 different games you can name, and I'm like, oh, dude, I would love to play that.
Yeah.
I'm in. Not everybody is like that. Typically, my impression of the marketplace outside of myself is that people tend to gravitate around just 2 to 4 games that are their mainstays. But
they will still venture out.
You're going to see those other games take a big leap forward.
Yeah, you only have so much time. But there's going to be other forays and other times. So, I think we covered that topic pretty well. I think
hostility to Mr. Riggs.
No.
I just want to end with this. I felt like it was a very well-written and edited article. I felt like a lot of the points were vague and then moved towards final conclusions that were just not accurate. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, this poor guy is going through something. He's really having a hard time with this, and it's hard to watch his golden moment pass. Yeah. I felt empathy because, brother, I've been there.
Yeah.
But you got to wear it like a badge of honor, okay? Everybody who games, if you game long enough, you will go through this.
I just think that you got a lot of great things. What's that?
Possibly 3 or 4 times.
Oh, yeah. You're doing to repeat the same things over again. But, I think he's just arrived at some wrong conclusions, but he's got a lot of the things right. We'll see how it turns out, because we got the whole year ahead of us.
So. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. So we're going to pack it on in and move on out. So thanks for listening in. You've made it this far. And of course, we'll be back next week with new topics. So until then,
may the dice always roll in your favor. We're out.
See ya.